Welcome to the Minimum Viable Podcast, a project of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. Our mission is to inspire, connect, and empower people in order to promote a culture of innovation in the U.S. national security community. You can learn more about DEF and get involved at DEF.org. That's DEF.org. We look forward to your ideas and are excited to connect you with other doers working on hard problems.
Okay, thanks everybody for joining. I appreciate it. So Cornerstones, welcome to DEF's Cornerstones program. As all of you know, DEF, Defense Entrepreneurs Forum, has thousands of members and has a lot of different types of programming and a big annual conference. And its goal is to promote innovation and to help innovators in the defense space. So what is Cornerstones is a program that's part of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum for venture capital and emerging companies to provide regular workshops on key skills and know-how. For example, what have we done so far? Because we just started over the summer, we've done one on digital marketing, financial modeling, accounting, pricing. And we have experts come in and speak on these issues. So very substantive, skill-focused workshop. That's only one part of Cornerstones. Cornerstones also will have practice pitch nights in the fall, where we'll have two members of Defense Entrepreneurs Forum who want to practice their pitches that are starting a business and going out for funding. They'll practice, and we'll get mock judges. There'll be other activities as well that have not been finalized. But key point here is that this program workshop is for everybody. So if there's something that you would like to learn about, hear from an expert, let us know, because whatever your agenda is, that's our agenda. And also, if you would like to speak, if you have an area of expertise and would like some visibility, for example, please let us know and we'd love to have you speak. These are recorded. So there's actually a lot of people that watch these in recording. So there's a lot of follow-up afterwards. It's not just in terms of the initial presentation. Now I'd like to introduce Ed Lee, our speaker for the day. And Ed is an expert in pricing. And a lot of people, entrepreneurs, don't even know pricing is an art or science. You can ask Ed if it's an art or a science. They don't even know they need help pricing. They don't even, you know, they just assume that it's not a big deal. But it's a pretty big deal, and it's critical to price properly, and it's hard for a startup. So Ed Lee's a pricing expert, and he's CEO of Hello Advisor, a growth consultancy that works with startup leadership teams to design high-impact pricing strategies. He works with startups and venture capital on pricing across all growth stages, and he has a lot of e-commerce experience, software, consumer goods, and other industries as well. He previously held leadership roles with LG Electronics and Simon Kucher Partners, a global management consulting firm. And he's also a resident expert at the Oxford Foundry, and he's worked with Techstars and Backstage Capital. And he's also a member of GRIP, which is a platform to advise emerging companies and venture capital, multidisciplinary advice, for example, pricing, marketing, fundraising, legal, intellectual property, GRIP. And I'll turn it over to Ed. Ed, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for the intro, Jed. So as Jed mentioned, we're going to be talking about pricing. We'll be talking about pricing for new ventures. Given what he's kind of shared with me about the community, I'm imagining there are going to be entrepreneurs and founders really across the board, from those that are still building on their ideas and trying to build their initial products to those that are far further along. So really kind of designed today's session to be able to talk to all entrepreneurs at all different phases. Jed has given me such a great intro, but let me just do just a kind of quick recap of myself. Like I said, I am the founder of Hello Advisor, a growth consultancy. We work across all growth stages. We work with startups, not just here in Southern California. We're based in Los Angeles, but also in Silicon Valley, New York, as well as in Europe. We do work with companies across different industries and sectors. So for everything from consumer goods, e-commerce, to digital healthcare, fintech, and so on. So if you have any specific questions related to your industry, please let me know. I also am a lecturer on entrepreneurship at UCLA. And I'm also a mentor and advisor for several global accelerators and incubators. So if you have any questions about those specific programs, happy to answer questions that you have. In the case that we don't get to your question tonight, if you do have any other questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I will share my email with everybody here. So basically what we'll cover, which is quite a bit, but we're going to talk about why pricing is critical to your growth. And I think to Jed's point, pricing is both art and science, but more importantly, it's a growth lever. And we're going to be talking about the role pricing plays, not just in the unit economics of your company, but also in terms of the competitive strategy, market positioning strategy, and so on. We'll be talking about pricing best practices. And I like to call these first principles because oftentimes there is a misconception around what pricing is, but more importantly, what pricing is designed to do for your respective venture. We'll be talking about the anatomy of your pricing approach. And I think it's going to be a little bit different than what you may have imagined. Either you've worked on pricing already, but hopefully this will bring and inspire some new ideas in terms of how you're actually approaching your pricing. We'll talk about some pricing examples of real world companies, and then we'll have just a quick overview in terms of some common mistakes, just from my experience talking to startup founders, new venture founders, hundreds, thousands of them around the world. And then knock on wood, we'll have time for Q&A, but like I said, if we don't get to your questions, you're welcome to shoot me a note afterwards with your respective question. So what is pricing? And this is a very common question, you know, and it sounds like a no-brainer. Why? Because we are exposed to pricing all day, every day, whether it be in the bills that we pay, in terms of going to the gas station, going to groceries, when we used to, you know, now the holidays are coming up, maybe there's vacation travel, we are exposed to pricing all the time. But when it comes to pricing for our own business, it's strangely enough, our capabilities seem to drop measurably, right? And so with the pandemic, you're seeing the uses of pricing and really what pricing actually is. And so this is an example back in March, where when there was a mad rush for toilet paper, the way that a company can start to use pricing, right? And everyone who can see the screen now, they'll be able to see that in this example, one roll of toilet paper is $3.50. If you wanted to buy two, it's $99, which is, of course, for all rational people, is ridiculous, but it was designed that way. It was designed that way because it is trying to instill a particular perception. It's trying to create context for the product and the service. It's also to steer behavior of customers, right? And so they're using price intentionally. It does not matter whether or not that two for $99 is actually $99 or $98 or heck, $50, right? It all has its intent, right? And so the more that we start to think strategically and tactically about our pricing, the more effective pricing can be for our respective companies. So needless to say, pricing is critical for your growth. And here's the challenge. And this is the challenge that we have seen time and again from founders who just have an idea to Fortune 500 companies, is that we're just not prepared to capture value in the market. And when I say capture value, I am getting down to the individual unit basis, right? We have done our own study, but there's other studies as well that find that companies are very well equipped to go out and chase volume. But when it comes to actually capturing respective value for the product or service that you offer, again, we very much struggle to do this. And this has really big consequences to your business, right? Now, for those of you that are thinking, you know what, I can underprice and I'm going to still be able to grow and scale. Well, research shows that actually CAC, or your customer acquisition costs, are just increasing. It's increasing quite a lot. Why? Because the traditional customer acquisition channels that you're probably either using or thinking about using, whether it be Google AdWords, Facebook ads, and what have you, the prices of that are increasing. Why? Because the demand for those services to acquire customers are also increasing, right? And so now, to be able to grow and scale, what should have cost maybe $100 5 years ago is now $150. And you have to account for that when you're thinking about growth for your respective business. Needless to say, startups and new venture creation is difficult, but one of the things that oftentimes get overlooked in terms of why new ventures fail is pricing. And, you know, we understand market need. We run out of, you know, the whole thing of, well, our business ran out of money. My counter argument to number two on this list is that you could just go out and try to make more money than is actually going out. The whole topic of profitability, I will use the word profitability a few times in our conversation today. But again, pricing is a pain point. It is really something that a lot of companies oftentimes either overlook or underestimate in terms of how their business not just starts, but actually scales and actually grows. For those of you that are familiar with Andreessen Horowitz, it was started by or was co-founded by Mark Andreessen, who was also the founder of Netscape. And when he sees one of his portfolio companies struggle, it's not about the technology. It's not about the innovation. It's not about the product. Mark Andreessen states that actually the number one problem that his portfolio's companies have when they have a problem, it's usually pricing. They're not getting the value that they're actually delivering, and that's ultimately hurting the companies in the long run. So we've obviously done quite a bit of research, and one of the things that we find is that despite the fact that pricing is a challenge, if not, it's still not a core competency of a company, companies know that pricing is critically important. We know that because pricing still remains in the hands of the CEO. And the CEO is oftentimes, in this case, in our study, at least 3 out of 4 of the companies that we surveyed, the CEO is the final decision maker. So we know it's strategically important. But the ironic thing is, even though that it's so strategically important, we cannot and we're not going to be distributing responsibility for this critical task, the way that we can make decisions, the way that we can build strategy is less clear. And so in the same study, we found that less than a fourth or less than a quarter of startups, and this is startups from pre-seed all the way up to growth stage where they are well over tens of millions of dollars in annual revenue, where less than a quarter have a formal pricing process. In other words, how do they actually come up and make this decision? There is very little pathway for them to actually do that. And to put even further context on it, in another study, not ours, they found that actually companies spend less than an hour per month on pricing. So, you know, which means that you're spending less than 12 hours per year on determining the monetary value of the products or services and effectively the revenue that you're going to be generating for your company, right? So what's the answer to this? And again, if the title of this talk didn't give away the answer, but we really need to really think about and build on the fundamentals. And I'm going to use this word several times, but it's about design. How do we design value, right? Because that is what pricing is going to look like and mean for our respective customers, right? So here's a simple equation of what great pricing looks like. It's strategic, it utilizes high quality inputs, it's designed, it's well executed. And again, it requires all four of these elements and components. So you can think of companies like Apple, You can think of disruptive companies like Amazon. You can think of more upstart companies like Warby Parker and so on. And you look at the way that they have gone to market, particularly around their pricing and their pricing strategy. They are superb in all four of these dimensions because they understand the importance of pricing and their pricing strategy to their growth and their long-term outlook. So again, I have mixed feelings about this quote, but I like to share this because there is at least one of the things that Henry Ford ended up doing is he went out or he tried or, you know, he had a perspective in terms of what customer feedback is supposed to look like. And again, a lot of innovators will say this is all the more reason why, you know, the inputs from the market isn't as valuable. It is very important to note, though, despite the fact that Henry Ford created the Model T, when it comes to the actual the growth of the automotive and the combustible engine market, it wasn't Ford that actually led that. Actually, it was GM that really spearheaded that, whereas the Model T consistently was that same kind of black veneer and coloring and so on. But as far as market penetration and market growth, it wasn't actually Ford. So while he was the innovator, in terms of actually building businesses that really, you know, went on and really started creating markets, it was actually ironically not Ford, but actually one of their competitors that did that. That being said, Ford is obviously a huge enterprise, a very successful one in its own right, but it is helpful to think about that, especially for those of you that are starting your own venture or are currently building a venture. And this is where pricing kind of has no home, right? Because where does really pricing sit within your company? And I'm not talking about an org chart or really, you know, just in terms of, you know, human resources, but really where does pricing sit? And this is a question that we get very, very frequently. And so pricing really fits in this intersection between the external facing elements and parts of your business and the internal facing parts of your business. Right, because quite frankly, pricing has implications to all of these things. For example, well, Ed, what does pricing have to do with product? Well, if the feature that you're currently building or the feature that's currently in your roadmap, if you discover that there is no pricing value, meaning no one's willing to give you a penny for it, would you continue to build it? Does that actually matter for your business? It may and may not. From a finance perspective, the way that you're going to price it will have implications to what the financial forecast is going to start to look like. It'll have implications in terms of potentially fundraising going forward and what your growth trajectory can look like. So it will have finance implications, but and not surprisingly, marketing and sales. What type of customers are you pricing? Are you trying to really acquire? Well, ideally you want customers who actually have a willingness to pay for your product. So you have to understand what the pricing dynamic is, and not just in terms of the number, but the way that your target customer will understand your product and the value that you're actually delivering, right? So it really fits into this intersection, this kind of odd, like no home thing where you'll have pricing sit with, you know, will lean towards finance or product or marketing and sales, but in reality, it fits in all of three of these buckets. So when you're thinking about pricing for your own respective company, ask yourself, what are the implications for the marketing assets we create, the demos we will do from a sales perspective, the products that we build, and then also what it means for our financial future, because it has implications on all of those areas. If nothing else, before you even think about pricing strategy and pricing tactics and trying to get into like, Ed, what's the perfect pricing model and price point for my respective venture? If nothing else, as you start to go through your own respective pricing journey, your own pricing exercise, pricing will help you be intellectually honest, right? Because effectively, what pricing and the work that you do with pricing will tell you is, will the market, will your customers feel that it's worth it, right? And that's where you're starting to have that, that's where you get to that intersection of, okay, they've seen the marketing assets, they've seen the ads, they've seen, they've talked to your salesperson, they've seen this, the fancy things that your product can do. Now is the point where they're going to look at this and they're going to say, is it actually worth it? And it's up to you to be able to say yes and be able to actually defend it. So I usually like to do this in a more of a live session, but again, it's helpful to remind yourself where we're actually, as a for-profit enterprise, what we're really designed to do. And one of the things that we're designed to do is actually generate sales or revenue. And so I can't tell you how many times I've asked this question to founders and they don't know how revenue was actually created. Now, I think deep down inside, I think they understand the fundamentals of it, but it's just, it's a helpful reminder that a revenue or your sales is a function of two variables, the volume and the price, right? So the volume is all the customers and the users that come through your door. So if you're a restaurant, it's how many seats that you're actually filling. And we used to be able to do that, at least do that more regularly, depending on where you are in the country or in the world. But it's also the price that you charge for everything that's being ordered, right? And that's how you generate your revenue. So again, it's effectively managing your revenue and your growth drivers, right? And so you have a company like Apple, who's able to sell one iPhone, whereas another competitor may have to sell two, maybe even three, in order to make the same amount of revenue. Again, it is strategic, it's purposeful, it's intentional. I mentioned Mark Andreessen earlier, and for those of you that are still in that, I need product market fit. I want to see if my product fits with this market. And so when people ask, like, how do I know you've achieved product market fit? Mark Andreessen, who is also an investor in companies like Airbnb, could attest to, this is his definition. It's fairly, very simple. It's, and I'll read this to you, but achieving product market fit, according to Andreessen, is that the customers are buying the product just as fast as you can make it. Money from customers is piling up in your company checking account. So effectively, you're generating revenue, and ideally a lot of it, right? That there is a willingness to pay for the product that you are creating, bringing to market. So that's actually very, very important. And one of those dimensions to product market fit is obviously the business model and the prices that you charge. So if you're really at that stage, it's important to keep in mind the role that pricing is going to be playing and for you to validate for the company. But more importantly, if you're going to go out for venture capital or raise institutional capital, it's important to validate this. Even if you're going to go in for a bank loan, they're going to be asking this question. But if for nothing else, if you're thinking from a more financial, profitability standpoint, there I use the P word again, unlike increasing volume or decreasing cost, in terms of impact to your bottom line, study after study from Harvard to MIT to my ex firm to our own firm has shown that increasing and improving pricing by 1% can have 3 to 5 times greater impact on your bottom line than increasing 1% in volume. And that makes sense because in order for you to acquire that volume, it's not free. It actually costs money in order to acquire that volume versus if you can improve pricing, and there's many ways of improving pricing, it can actually increase and improve your bottom line by 300 to 500%, right? Not 3%, 5%, we're talking hundreds of percent improvements. So we definitely need to be strategic on how we're designing and managing our prices. So let's talk about 5 kind of best practices and really what I like to call pricing first principles, right? Number 1, pricing is a skill. And make no mistake, which is all the more reason why, it's not just a decision where you just take a model and you just adopt it in random arbitrary price selection, right? It's a skill, and a skill that starts from the strategic level in asking the question of what is pricing going to help us achieve? What do we need it to achieve and why? But also, it's also a skill because it tells you what kind of information you're able to collect and how you're able to actually process that information, right? You hear that from marketing experts, you hear that from sales experts, you'll hear that from product experts, right? About how you collect information and process information. We do this for so many other elements of our business, and yet when it comes to effectively how our business is going to make money, it is a skill that we generally fall below expectations. Pricing is designed, and it is designed for your business. And when I say its price is designed, really, when you think about all the elements of your pricing, there are many, many design choices that you're going to have to make. I'm going to share a few examples of this later on, but everything from, will it be subscription or will it be transactional? Will it have multiple tiers? Will it have bolt-ons? Will it have ancillary products or services? Will it be annual-based or monthly-based? And so on and so forth. All of these are design decisions that need to be made, and it has to be made for your product and service and for your customers. Pricing is evolutionary. Anybody who has seen a business either in growth or over time will be able to attest to this. The business changes. The business changes internally in terms of hopefully with growth, with success. It also grows because the product changes. The product might get more sophisticated. Maybe the product or the product range starts to grow and to expand. Maybe the business is entering new different markets and different sectors. Again, it changes, and to which point the pricing itself, it also changes and starts to evolve. Externally, again, if you are doing the things that you need to do to get it to where you need the business to get to, there's no doubt competition is going to be lurking, either those that have already existed within your market or those that are seeing your success and saying, I can do it better, at which point it's going to create different types of pressure, not just from a product and a marketing, sales and marketing perspective, but also from a pricing perspective. So inevitably, pricing needs to evolve. And having that mindset that it's constantly changing and we need to not only be pricing for today, but also for tomorrow, has to be part of the DNA of your organization. I've already kind of touched upon this earlier, but pricing is interconnected. Pricing rarely sits in a vacuum, right? The decisions you make on pricing will have implications to how your salespeople sell. It will have implications in terms of what kind of marketing assets your team is going to be creating. It'll have implications on potential opportunities to raise financing, right? So your pricing is highly interconnected to all elements of your business. Lastly, pricing is a competitive advantage. And it's a competitive advantage, and I think the easiest way people understand and entrepreneurs typically understand this is because it's a competitive advantage when you can price low. But it's also a price competitive advantage when you can price high. And that's a very binary way of looking at pricing. But it's also the way that you price, kind of going back to number two, in terms of how you're designing it, right? And so before we had the freemium model, it was something that was actually created and it was brought to market. And it became a way that some companies were able to create differentiation from more established players. So a lot of software companies use the freemium model, a lot of mobile app companies use the freemium model to move away from usually highly transactional type of sales, And so they were able to use pricing by giving it away for free to start and starting to build in the process. And so they created this advantage for companies that just weren't equipped or agile enough to be able to adapt to those type of situations. Again, but you're also seeing that on, you know, if we think a little bit more binary, on the higher end of the market, right? So you look at companies, if you're thinking about like luxury consumer goods, like Hermes in the market, where, and I'm by no means an expert in handbags, but handbags that cost not just thousands, but tens of thousands of dollars, right? Again, high quality, handmade, all of that. But is it really 10 times more than a quote unquote more mainstream luxury brand where a handbag may be only $1,000? Is it really 100 times more, is it 100 times better? And therein lies the question. So they create a competitive advantage by using price as part of their offer. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about the inputs in the design and to kind of illustrate some of this for you. So when we think about ways we price, right, it really is a function in terms of inputs and design, right? So the first way, and probably the simplest way, is cost-based pricing. And it is exactly as it sounds. We take the cost and we add a margin on top of that, right? And so if I was selling a chair, my chair costs $10 to produce and I want a 50% margin, my price to a customer is $15. Fairly straightforward. But again, we're taking inputs, our cost inputs, to determine what our end price is going to be. Now, the variable and the more arbitrary part of this is the margin. And not surprisingly, the margin is always some sort of round number, 10%, 20%, 50%. And it's very, very arbitrary. But again, the primary driver of a cost plus or cost-based price is the cost component to it. The second, and this is probably where most ventures sit, is around competitor-based pricing. And that competitor-based pricing is really focused on understanding what either like-for-like or similar type of products, at least even tangentially, how they're currently pricing in terms of the market. So it's definitely one of the cases of my competitor A prices in this way, or they price it at $10 or $15 for my, you know, for a comparable chair. And so I'm going to be pricing there and thereabouts to that particular price, right? It's very straightforward. We are collecting competitor information. We're compiling the different pricing models that they're currently using in order to hopefully inform our competitor-based prices, right? Now, if you kind of see a theme here, through it all, we generally need information and we want and we seek out information to build our prices. Now, ironically, in both of these examples of your cost plus your competitor-based price, you're using other people's information. So for in this instance, you're using your suppliers who will be telling you, because they'll tell you when they send you your invoice, that this is what it costs. So you need to price above that number. Your competitor-based pricing is the exact same thing. You're using what your competitors are currently pricing and you're building your prices off of that. Interestingly enough, it may not and oftentimes does not necessarily represent the willingness to pay and the value perceptions for, again, your unique product or service in the marketplace for your customers. This is where kind of that next level of pricing starts to look, which is value-based pricing. And that value-based pricing is really defining your pricing based on your customers, what drives value for your customers, and their willingness to pay, right? it's hyper specific, but this is also where it becomes very, very complex. And this is where the degree of art and science starts to come into play, because you have to fundamentally ask, who is your customer? What is really driving value? What elements of your product or your service do they really care about? And to what extent, right? And the interesting part of this, and really the most insightful and profound elements to this, is really understanding and really dissecting it away from the cost as well as the competitor, right? And being able to leverage what the, your users and what your customers are telling you in terms of where they're deriving value and what is really driving up or downwards their willingness to pay. And so this is where, where this reality starts to come into play. We just don't know our customers well enough. And it's ironic because when we ask founders whether or not they've either A, created a customer segmentation or created customer segments, or B, have created buyer's personas, that they can't differentiate in terms of what kind of customers are more willing to pay and for what reason, right? Because we just don't know our customers in that way, right? And so typically when we're thinking about pricing, we really focus on the what, right? We want to know, is it $10 or $11.99 or $1,000.99, whatever that is going to be, it's the what, right? And that's a very valid question, but it's only one part of the bigger equation. And this is what we generally call the five W's of pricing, right? It's the what, but it's also the why. Why are we going to price in this way? What is it that we're trying to drive, right? So in this example here, we actually want to drive customers towards a paid middle option, or we really want to drive the perception of how robust of a solution our product or service is currently able to offer. Right. And so we want to design it in such a way that reflects that. Right. And so what is included and what's not included? Right. What is the reason that we're going to be using the structure? Then there's the who. Who are these products really for? Right. And it's really difficult to have the who conversation without asking the question about price. Right. What is the real willingness to pay for a customer who will take the free product, or a user who will take a free product, versus one that will actually pay X or pay Y? And we have to start to get really, really specific, right, when we're really asking that question. And oftentimes, this is where a lot of the customer segmentation and buyer personas kind of miss the mark. Because while you can start to demonstrate that they're more likely to have an iPhone versus an Android, do they actually fit into perhaps one of these buckets? And if so, to what extent and what's really driving that? There's the where, right? And so you'll see this oftentimes, you know, for a whole host of different products, but maybe there's different channels that you want to take them to. Maybe there are different ways that you need them to buy. Maybe you need them to do a demo, right? So that there is more a one-on-one, albeit virtual, type of engagement that you might have with them, right? So how are you starting to redirect them, right? And again, that too could be either a barrier, or it can be something that's really enticing because it feels more customized and more individualized versus some of the other options, and you're kind of your do-it-yourself. And then lastly, the when, right? Like, how do they buy? When do you need them to buy? Again, all connected to the overarching strategy as to what do you want these customers and how do you want to influence their behavior, right? And this takes quite a bit of input. It takes quite a bit of insight to understand how we're starting to design the five W's for your pricing, right? And not surprisingly, in all of this, in one of our studies, we have found that less than a third, or slightly less than a third, really understand their customers' true willingness to pay. And this is given what I do, it's somewhat not surprising, and yet it's equally very, very surprising. Because again, of all the things and all the insights that we collect and we understand about our users and our customers, the fact that we don't know whether or not they're willing to pay a dollar or $100 is a big data point and a big piece of insight that can really change the way that we market and can really influence the way that we sell and go to market in general for our businesses. So, and then to that note about trying to understand our customers, there's a principle that we like to share with our clients. It's called the customer ring principle. And this is really taking, if you have one, your customer segments and dividing it into three. So every customer segment has three. So if you have four customer segments or four buyer personas, you want to actually extrapolate that into 12 rings. And you want to get really, really granular in terms of who is included in these rings and what are really driving those particular customers to fit in one of those rings. And the principle of this, and the reason why, is we tend to try to price for multiple rings at a time. And that has multiple effects. Number one, it can potentially dilute value in the product or service because you're trying to make the offer enticing and attractive to different rings that really have different value drivers. And so it also has, therefore, a revenue impact. It also has a cost impact on your business. But also, it also takes away a degree of focus in terms of how you're going to market and how you're actually building out your pricing strategy. So in this illustration here, and just in this model here, really at that core is where your tribe sits. So it's that first dozen, it's that first 100 customers that you have, where really there's nothing you can do to fail them. They will accept all your faults and all the bugs of your product or your service. They love you, and they have an extremely high willingness to pay. But it's a very, very small part of the overall construct. And as you go further and further away from your tribe, they have different requirements. They have potentially higher price sensitivity. They're going to care less about some of your core value propositions. They're going to look for incentives. They're going to look for the deal, right? And so you want to be able to adapt your pricing according to that. So a really great example of that is Slack. And so for those of you who know kind of Slack's history and before they became a billion-dollar public company, is that when they were starting off, they had a hyper, hyper, hyper specific customer ring. And they were really focused in on not just entrepreneurs and new ventures, but tech startups. They were looking and they were really focusing in on tech startups that sat primarily in tech ecosystems. They generally had a connection to either a venture capitalist or within their venture capital network. So not too many degrees of separation from there. And then also those startups had typically between 5, no more, maybe 10 team members, right? So it's very, very small. Now, when we think about the application of Slack today, and now they've actually, just in the last 3 years, have now started to penetrate the Fortune 500 or even the Fortune 100. Again, that wasn't their use case. That wasn't where they were looking to price and to monetize on. That came actually several years later as they expanded. They did not go really towards the SMB market, the small businesses, where that still had 5 employees. They were looking for a particular type of customer ring with a particular type of profile that had a particular willingness to pay, who understood paying for software products like this and paying on a per user basis, something that maybe some mom and pops or even some SMBs are not as accustomed to. So really, the whole principle around customer rings is getting granular and really focusing in on that willingness to pay and to stage out how you're attaching and attacking those next layers or those next rings for your business. So in the time remaining, we're going to go through some examples. And so this is one that I love to share, especially those of you that are thinking about raising venture capital or institutional capital. But this is the pricing page for 1Password. And 1Password, for those of you who may not be familiar, they are a online password locker. So they're one of their competitors is LastPass amongst others. And what makes the story of 1Password unique is that last year, I believe in October, November, is when they had their first institutional round where they raised a shockingly high seed round of $200 million, which effectively made them basically a billion-dollar company and or a unicorn. But they bootstrapped, and their trajectory was one of profitability from day one, and they made sure that they were pricing for their respective customers to satisfy that particular strategy. But you'll see here, right, you have a very common pricing design, one for teams, one for business. But if you look carefully here and you include what's included in 1Password Teams versus 1Password Business, surprise, surprise, it's exactly the same thing, line for line. So why are you going to be paying effectively 100% more to get business per user per month? And what is it? Is that a business account includes family accounts. So you can actually share this with other family members and to use this outside of the business context, right? Why? Because there's a greater willingness to pay to have that. That is actually, according to 1LastPass, is actually worth 100% more than your business and team's solution here, right? And again, it really comes down to what is bringing the most value and the willingness to pay, and being able to identify it had nothing to do with any of these things that are listed below. And that's the differentiator. Here's an example of an edtech company. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to kind of recalibrate for schools. This includes private schools, public schools throughout the US. And they wanted to recalibrate what their software is designed to do, or what their software is actually worth. So while most of their customers were definitely paying more than $99 per month, they want to kind of set the perception of what you are actually getting. But in addition to that, they also put in here a slider to be able to allow their prospective users and their prospective customers to kind of estimate what it will actually cost you if you were to adopt their software, right? But here, it's starting off by not only setting the stage of, in this case, even relative affordability for software, but also setting a expectation and a perception of what that software is worth, even before they, before anyone starts to play around with the sliders below, right? And so, you know, whether it was $99 or $98 in this instance, again, had little bearing in terms of conversion, but it had everything to do with perception, where if we did not include that, then it would change the impact that the slider and the self kind of pricing or price estimates, the functionality that this particular company would be able to actually show. Another example is around project management and project management software. You may have heard of Asana. They're founded by one of the ex-founders of Facebook. They're very well funded. I believe that they raised north of $250 million, and they're expected to go public sometime next month, or at least sometime this year. And they're both offering project management software, but and the one on the right, Rike, which is another project, a large project management software startup, instead they actually go a little bit more granular. So yes, they have the traditional free professional business enterprise. They identify by different names because it's not just premium, but it's for professional, right? Which has different connotations than if it was just a premium. They're asking the question of you for your business, are you ready for professional versus more of a freelancer, or at least the perception of something that's less advanced? And what is that worth? It's worth $9.80 versus Asana, which is offering the $10.99. But Rike, the company tier on the right, they also add a different layer, right? Not only is it in these four different levels, similar to Asana, but they also have use cases. So they have, are you a marketing creative team? Are you a service and delivery team, right? And while by and large, in terms of functionality, there may be certain overlaps, again, it's asking the user to say, actually, I am a creative team. Therefore, I may need a quote unquote creative solution, right? And I need it to be priced, and I have my creative team or creative leader hat on, which means that I have now potentially a different willingness to pay, right? Very much designed. And you can add different layers, different components. All of this in terms of now changing and altering and influencing what these numbers actually mean, right? And the last thing you'll also notice in terms of Rike, the company to your right, is they don't use .99. Now, even though statistically, and this is why the .99 has become so prevalent, and again, consulting firms, including those from my past life, who is has championed this around the world, again, they decided, you know what, actually 0.80. Why? Because it begs the question of why are they 19 cents cheaper, right? It is cheaper. And even though it may seem insignificant, again, when you have 200 users at 20 cents times 12 months or over years, again, maybe that becomes a little bit more material for you, right? So these are the type of questions that they're asking. And these are the type of things, you know, that they're type of dimensions that you can start to really get into and start to really define what this means for your business. Other popular models, you know, that you've probably seen, other subscription type of models, membership models, as well as freemium models. And we've talked about some of these already. So we have got a couple more minutes. So let me just quickly talk about three common mistakes we see most often, right? So number one, not working on pricing or starting on your work on pricing really too late, right? Like building a product, pricing definitely takes time. It takes insight. It takes decisions that need to be made. But again, the worst thing that you could do is not work on your pricing at all. And it, unfortunately, it's something that we continue to see from startups at really all stages of growth. Number two, making your pricing decisions based on gut feel or anecdotal information. Now, I say anecdotal, but typically you'll probably look at, I think Asana is my competitor, and therefore I'm going to price around there. Now, it begs the question of, are Asana users really your customers? Or is the Asana solution exactly the same thing as really what makes your particular product or service special, right? Because you didn't build something to be just like somebody else. You built something because you thought there was a problem, that there was a gap in the market, or that there was a way to do it better, easier, more promising for your customers and your users. So oftentimes what we end up seeing, though, is that it kind of falls back onto this anecdotal gut feel, like, I think it's about this. And so we also start to play into our own kind of pricing psychology as we do as consumers, and saying, well, I don't think they're going to price, or I don't think anyone's going to buy at this And there's only one direction the moment we start our sentence using that, it only goes down. So again, it is definitely something that we see. And lastly, again, one of the best practices we talked about earlier is about acknowledging that pricing is evolutionary. So again, pricing conditions and situations change. And so not being able to have a structured, repeatable process is truly a hindrance for companies, especially those that are really trying to scale. So it is something that I would definitely advise everybody to look at and to really take into account when they are thinking about their pricing. Lastly, and I promise you this is it, and I've kept to the basic hour, is that you are creating something. You're creating something of value, and your pricing is certainly one reflection of that value. Defend it. Defend it with passion and earnest, just like you would any other parts of your business. And with that, thank you so much. That's my email. You are welcome to, if there's anything that I haven't covered that you want to ask me or have questions about, you're welcome to do so. But I can stick around, ask some additional questions if anyone has any.
That was excellent, Ed. Thank you very much.
Sure.
It was really very much on point. Just a note to the people watching the recording, feel free to reach out to Ed. If you have questions, his email is right there, even if you're not watching live. If anybody has any questions, as I mentioned, just raise your hand. There's not a lot of people on the live right now. So go ahead and raise your hand if you have any questions. Anybody have questions? Go ahead, Julia. Go ahead and unmute yourself. There you are. Julia, go ahead.
Hi, Julia Fofana. Just a really quick question. You made a great point about creating a repeatable process in pricing. How is that possible for a market that you're not able to scale yet on value just starting out?
So when we think about process, again, think about how a product is actually designed. You know, again, it could be basic hypotheses that you're creating, where you're going to start to collect information, where you're going to collect data and insights. Even for markets that don't yet exist, there are some hypotheses that you can start to test, whether it could be even the insights that you're collecting through user testing or demos that you may be doing of your product or your service. So again, it is to ensure that when the market or the competitive landscape starts to change, what are you going to do next, right? And so there are early things, repeatable things that you could start doing even at the earliest of stages.
Great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Any other questions? Raise your hand. Okay, Ed, thank you very much. That was really excellent, really on point, and really appreciate it. And
absolutely.
It's exactly what Cornerstones is all about. And again, feel free to reach out to Ed if you have pricing questions. Thanks, everybody, for joining.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. We love ideas and feedback, so feel free to send your thoughts to hello@deft.org. For more great content and to stay in the loop about community events and activities, follow us on social media and subscribe to our monthly newsletter. Everyone plays a part in building the innovative national security culture we want to see. To find where you fit, just go to deft.org/join. That's deft.org/join.